In this week, on the 1st of December 1990, a 4-0 top flight win at Carrow Road was good enough to earn the Dons a Barclays Performance of the Week award and caretaker boss Roy Harford a permanent contract. John Fastu's strike after 26 seconds set the scene for an opening half hour in which the visitors simply swept aside the stunned host with four unanswered goals. "I thought we were magnificent," former Fulham coach Harford commented afterwards. "The only problem was at half time, I didn't know what to say." Ah, well, fortunately, we've always got lots to say. We're the Samwell Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, hello, dear listener. Welcome to the Samwell Wombles podcast. Yet again, we have a very special show. This is how we like to roll. Before I get into it, I'd just like to welcome my compadres. Hello, mon frère, Niall Cooper. How are you doing?
All right. Obviously, fresh from Huddersfield. I do remember that game, the 4-0 win away at Norwich, which we went to, in which there was a very famous quote from one of the people that we were with that I can't repeat because it involved, "There's no way that Wimbledon will have scored by now, and if they do, I will." And they're dot, dot, dot. And you can fill in whatever that dot, dot, dot was. And we were a bit cross. But there you go. We did miss the first goal.
We were a bit cross. I remember that because I just started college at uni. It was brilliant. And our producer, our man with all the buttons, all the knowledge, Dr. Professor Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Excellent. Good. And our man with the stats and all the knowledge and without a moustache, hello, Tormart Lewis, how are you?
Good evening, November is over. Thank you very much to all those people who donated. I raised £275 for mental health and other charities. So much appreciated everybody who was in a position to contribute. So I am clean shaven and it feels so much nicer. All good. Thank you. Two quick corrections. Number one, Ray Harford, not Roy Harford. Rest in peace. I've forgotten the second correction already because your introduction was too long.
Because my introduction was too long. Wow. That's amazing.
Oh, no. Actually, it wasn't a correction. It was a comment that you were fortunate enough to go to university and see our team win in your university town, whereas I went to Leeds and only went to Elland Road once in that time, the early 90s, when Leeds had just come up into the top division and they were thumping everybody left, right and centre, and we lost 4-1 and we were lucky to get the one.
Hey, I never thought I'd watch Wimbledon play Newport, obviously, but of course we clearly did in the end. So it was after I'd finished university, though, so I had to go back.
There you go. And anyhow, thank you very much for all of that, chaps. But our special guest today, who has been with us before in the past, but we'd like to welcome back the chair of the Dons Trust Board, Mr. Angus Fox. Hello, Angus. How are you?
I'm really good. Nice to be on here again, and thanks for having me.
You are more than welcome. We'll get into the question stuff in a bit, but I think we should just reflect on Huddersfield. So, yes, both myself and my brother went up to Huddersfield this weekend, and I've got to say, it is one hell of a stadium. It's amazing up there. I mean, I know it's like an out of town retail park, but honestly, the architecture, and the setting of it, in actual fact, although it's in a retail park, it's on the edge. So you've got this lovely woodland behind it. There's a river that flows next to it. The architecture is amazing. You sit in there, and it's just, it was one of the best stadiums I think I've been to certainly in League One, if not in lots of other places. It's fantastic. And it was a crazy great game of football. And I think, Niall, we were both going down there anticipating that we would be, leaving at half time, yeah?
I'd went there with the optimism of thinking that maybe if we lost by less than four, that would be good. It's where I've gone to on current form. So, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. Has to be said that Bishop did clearly, in my mind, was player of the match for us. Maybe Seddon; those two were the kind of standouts. But it was we were under the cosh hugely in the first half, and he pulled up some great saves, and somehow we were 1-0 up. So no, it was good. Though I have to say, I clearly had slightly gone into a hazy sense of being far too far north for my brain to really properly work. Because, as you all know, I bought a Bovril at half time, which is unheard of. And I don't know what possibly possessed me to do that, but I did indeed buy a Bovril. So there you go. Something must have been going wrong.
Dear listener, the main problem here is that Niall went to university in Lancaster, which clearly isn't far enough north for him. Just as he went to Yorkshire, and I suspect that West Yorkshire, where Huddersfield is further south than Lancaster, just about. I am happy to stand corrected.
Yeah, you are completely correct, actually.
What happened with the Bovril, though, Noel? What happened?
It was very hot.
All that happens with
And
Bovril is you miss your mouth and it goes onto your fingers when you're wearing gloves, and then you have to suck your fingers and it doesn't taste so good.
Well, okay, all right, Mark. Well, I've given
the
and
thing with
that's an
Bovril,
interesting
I've
tip
not
on.
finished, Matt, is that right? I think what I'd probably preferred is a pot of a glass of Bisto rather than Bovril. Because it was too watery. If I'm going to have gravy, which is clearly what I had just bought in a cup, I didn't realise. I don't know what possessed me at all. I've got no idea. Amelia had bought a hot chocolate, which is the sensible option, and I've gone for Bovril, and I should have really just, whatever. Anyway, Bisto.
When we're
That's
talking
what
hot
she said in
drinks,
the north.
can I actually just put a shout out for our Mark? Because there haven't been many comments about food this season, which in itself is a good thing, because we know exactly how particularly shoddy Elior were. But I had a cup of hot chocolate at the last home game, and it was chocolatey, and it was actually properly mixed in, and it actually tasted chocolatey all the way through. In fact, it was probably, bearing in mind how the game went, the highlight of the whole game.
Did you try the blue and yellow donut at the
Blue
last
and
home
yellow
game?
donuts.
Yeah,
My word,
where are they,
Mr.
Angus?
Fox, where'd you find
Mate,
them? Are they only in
mate.
the boardroom? Are
No,
they on available for Hopalong?
they're on sale, above where I am in 105 at the normal outlets. So lovely. Absolutely lovely.
There's a blue and
Right,
yellow donut. I
okay.
am in
I
heaven,
genuinely,
Angus. I did not know
I think I've let this go on for far too long.
that.
This conversation here about flipping hot drinks, don't do Bovril, and donuts are
Mark's
really,
doing
for
shout
goodness
outs
sake.
for corporations now. He's like
Not,
he can do shout outs for everything, and now he's doing it
nah,
for
well, that, we know what Mark's like.
industries.
He'll give a shout out the drop of a hat. Anyhow, important thing was it's a great stadium. It was a great performance. The first half was a little bit, we were backs against the wall, Huddersfield are a very good side, incredibly quick. Felt like they could open us up at any point. But in the second half, we really stuck out. It felt like the start of the season. It felt like that bit earlier in the season. Where we were getting stuck in. We were showing our spirit. We were defending magnificently, to be honest with you. And I know that JJ was upset with some of the goals. Their first goal was a wicked deflection. But they kept trying the same thing to over and over again, and we were overloaded, certainly on the wings. So this is what they were doing. They were getting it out to the wings and crossing balls in. The amount of crosses into the box was incredible. I think at the end of it, the BBC was saying it was like they had 25 shots, 10 on target. It was, but we defended brilliantly. And the fact that, for me, when we went 2-all, I thought that was it. We would lose this game. But it's us who scored the third goal, and we took the sting out of them immediately in the second half when they'd gone 1-1, and then we scored like within a minute or two to make it 2-1 to us. But brilliant performance, and yeah, Bishop just kept us in it, and Seddon I thought was fantastic. We
I
all
thought
love
Orsi
Steve.
played a good game too. I know he's sometimes gets a bit of stick from us, but I thought he was brilliant.
It's interesting you mentioned Orsi, and I was gonna ask you, Angus, your thoughts on that, because I feel, I mean, I don't know how much you've heard of us, but I think we find him a very, very difficult person.
I understand that. That's why I mentioned him, because
Yeah.
he answered that in the way that a footballer does, by scoring a goal. So
And to
that's
be
good, isn't
fair,
it?
yeah, his setup for the first goal
Yeah, I
which
mean,
you
listen.
only see if you actually watch the highlights that the ITV put out, is exactly what a centre forward needs to do. And I think what makes it most frustrating is that's what we want him to do every match.
And that's what you were saying last week. He didn't do. You were kind of saying he was a goal hanger and just hanging about, but he didn't do that on Saturday. He was a fundamental part of the team on Saturday, which was to me. Was
I mean,
a good
you're right. I mean, his goal was a decent strike from. I can't remember if it was 1 or 2 yards out, but I think the thing. Listen, Angus, it's not about
blinding.
Him.
It was a blinding goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was amazing.
The way that Goodman palmed it into his path on the goal line. You know, it takes a proper decent, a talented striker to put that way.
Any
for my grandmother.
Any truth in the rumour that Goodman still had a Wimbledon shirt on underneath his Huddersfield jersey?
I think it was...
Anything about, you know, talking about Goodman, you mentioned him. He didn't have that great a game. And certainly reading the comments, the Huddersfield fans don't seem to like him very much, which I'm really shocked by, because he was such an asset for us last season, so brilliant for us. And I don't know what to put that on. Perhaps that's just because he hasn't got Bezo anymore.
I
who knows?
Think
that's what it might
that,
be.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Angus. I think this says a lot about Bezo, because I think Bezo gets goalkeepers to have that level of confidence or level of self-belief that you really need. And I think it does say, it just says an awful lot, a huge amount on that. I'm going to, on Orsi, right? Orsi did put in a relatively, I'm going to praise him, which I really don't like doing, right? He did put a bit of a shift in. The issue I've got with him still remains. He only had to say one, he had an extended interview, right? There was one question he needed to ask, be asked, and one question he needed to answer. And then the world's a happy place. That's it. That for me remains the big thing. I know, well, actually, you know, I've spoken to a few other Dons fans, and it's completely Marmite question. There's one way to solve it.
Angus, I think this is the big problem that that people have with Orsi, is where he played his football last season, and that he has an opportunity to speak out against the franchise, and he hasn't. And so that is our problem with him. I think that a lot of people would be lauding him up a lot higher on his performance on Saturday if he'd have said something. But
I can't speak for him. But he was, you know, we knew that when we took him on, we knew what his background was, and we all agreed to have him. Mm. It was discussed, you know, with us before that happened, to check that it was okay. And it was okay under all of our rules that we've passed in the past about players who've played there. So, and he's doing a shift for us. So he's a professional footballer. He's doing a great job for us, and long may that continue.
He has actually scored more goals than Kelly has. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, but Kelly.
Oh, Mark, right? You've changed your tune, haven't you? You've got
no.
You've
I'm just
jumped on the Aussie bandwagon.
I'm not on any kind of Aussie bandwagon, but I'd rather have Kelly back because he's quicker.
Right, let's stop going down this Aussie rabbit hole, because it's ridiculous. But what I'd say is, it sounds to me from that extended interview, even though he didn't say anything against franchise, which we all think would hope he will, that he's feeling like he's getting more and more fit, and it's taken him a while because he had less of a pre-season. And so I suspect we're going to see a lot more of him now. So maybe if anyone, not like we said last week, none of the players listen to this podcast, obviously. But if someone can figure out how to tell him that he needs to do a PR exercise and just get someone to ask him some question about why he is distancing himself from the franchise, that'd be great.
Can I throw a different question out? My different question is, every time I kind of decide entirely randomly that Marcus Brown and the team and the management don't really know where to play Marcus Brown best, and therefore he's still a luxury that we can't really afford because we haven't got enough other players that win the ball and create chances, he goes and scores a goal. And it's so, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but it's like so frustrating, because I'm thinking, he's not a forward, and yeah, he scores goals. He's actually, I think, now our joint top scorer alongside Stevens, obviously, who's been out for some time. And obviously a long, rather more than Omar, unfortunately. But it's so frustrating, still so frustrating, because he just doesn't quite seem to necessarily be involved in as much of the game as you want him to be. And there are games that have happened at home recently, where you sort of see him shrugging his shoulders and you think, no, I want a Wimbledon player to show a little bit more oomph, like Steve does all the time, irrespective as to what the score is. But then he keeps popping up with goals. So I suppose I shouldn't really complain. I should just get back in my box.
But I think that was always thought about Brown, to be honest with you, Mark. That's what he likes. He's kind of like he drifts in and out, which is not the Wimbledon player that we usually have. But he can do something amazing. So, but overall, it was for me a great experience being up there. Great stadium and a brilliant result. I think people get a little bit. We were a little bit like, oh, if only we could have held on. But honestly, they were peppering us. I think it's a very good point on the road. Yeah.
You'd have taken the draw before the game, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it stopped
well,
the
like
rot.
I was taking lose by less than four before the game. So yeah, 3-3 draw is far beyond my expectations.
If you look at their budget, you know, their playing budget is stratospherical.
And what? Alfie May was top scorer in League One last year and they brought him on as a sub. Yeah. And he scored from about 2 yards out. No one's complaining about that because he's a poacher, you know?
Yeah, but he's not our player.
Where is their budget?
I'm complaining about it because he scored against us, mate. But it was made of Wimbledon players, wasn't it? The best, you know, Owen Goodman, Alfie May, and Karlstein were all playing for Huddersfield. So they've come through our academy. So we create good players. It's what they do with it when they get there, I guess, is the problem for them.
It's one of those things that probably get into trouble for saying this, but you can't be sorry for Castledean scoring a goal in that game. It's kind of a good reflection on our academy, even though it was a goal against us.
Yeah.
No,
and it bounced off us and went in.
For example, if I was a Charlton and they stay up this season, then I would take a risk on someone like Castledean. Because he's actually done a couple of different loans and shown as he's progressed that he's clearly too good for League One.
Yeah. But I think, to be honest with you, the most controversial thing from the Huddersfield game was the programme. The Huddersfield programme.
Yeah, we saw it too, yeah.
Yeah, so in it, they had an article. Now, I didn't buy the programme. I confess I saw this through social medias. In it was a piece from an ex-player. You know, they do that bit where they talk to a player who's played for both clubs. Well, this was a player who apparently played for both clubs, except he's played for Wimbledon. I'm doing the inverted commas. You can't see this. He played for Wimbledon in 2003 and had some very interesting things to say about being a Wimbledon fan, one of which was about how the fans had deserted the club without realising that by 2003... we were already supporting AFC Wimbledon. We hadn't deserted the club. The club had deserted us, as we keep saying time and time again. And it was absolutely infuriating. And I can't believe that people in Huddersfield, the people producing that programme, are so short-sighted and would do anything so inflammatory. It was really, really frustrating. So
wasted a couple of pages in a program. I don't understand any of the reason for any of that to be there. They should have just said sorry, we're not putting it in or whatever, because it just didn't mean anything.
Yeah, so Angus, I was going to put a question to you on this.
Well, I can tell you, we were quite annoyed about it when we saw it, because we didn't see it till we got there. Of course, the folks who were at the game. And we're a scoop for you. Gave you a scoop last time we came on this podcast with you guys.
Yes.
We are about to put a statement on the website about it with a rebuttal, and expressing how, you know, annoyed we are really that they put this in their match day program, and we think that's wrong. So I didn't get a chance to approve it and proof it tonight, but I'm hoping I'll get it done. It'll be done by the time this podcast comes out. So you'll be able to see it on the Dodds Trust website, see what we say about it. And, you know, we're quite hard about it, because it still annoys so many people in our club when people say things like this about us. And we feel like it's a lazy article. It's full of cliches. It's not accurate.
Yeah, that's the thing I said straight away. This is lazy, lazy. There's nothing in it that actually is factual in any capacity. It's completely wrong. You know, it was a Yeah, when someone then said, but they started in 2003, I was like, well, obviously we weren't there. Like,
No.
it's
So,
like.
look, all I can say is look at our website. We will have published this by the time you hear this online, and we'll have a full and frank response to it.
That's
Well, you
great
say
to
that, but I'm pretty sure that Adam's going to get this out straight away. Adam, is this?
the dog has to get walked first.
Well, when I get offline from here, I've got a draft of it in front of me. I'll work through it and publish it on
It'll be a
the
race. It'll be a
It's a
race against
race.
time.
Oh, I'm not racing anyone, flipping heck.
That depends on how many other hard-hitting questions Matt's got for
Oh dear
Angus.
me! Excellent. Well, I'm sure we got some. We got some. It's But thanks for that, Angus. I mean, I think that was one of the things that did annoy us. And despite the fact it was a lovely trip. I mean, we got in there fairly late, so we didn't meet anybody from Huddersfield, or and we left straight after the game. But the whole place seemed great. But yeah, that really put a little bit of a that was just very frustrating. But anyhow, that's the result. It stopped a bit of a rot. We've got the cup game. The EFL Trophy game tomorrow against Cardiff. I don't know, Angus. I don't suppose you would know off the top of your head how many people we're thinking we might bring up there. Because
I don't know. It's at 7 o'clock. It's a really odd time for one thing, and it's also in Cardiff for another. So,
yeah, exactly.
I went to the last one. I went to the Bromley one, and they're obviously not as well attended as our League One games.
Yeah.
And I suppose they will get a bit more attended as we get further on in that competition.
Well, let's hope so, because I understand. I mean, like, the money's obviously an important factor in it. I mean, we want to get far in a competition, but the money's important, I guess, as well.
Yeah, money's always important to Wimbledon. I'm sure you're going to ask me about that shortly as
Yeah.
well. But it's definitely very important to us. And also, I think from my point of view, tomorrow's going to be interesting because it'll be an opportunity to see how well we play against Cardiff. So that's going to be fascinating to
Yeah.
watch.
And I
Well, I
wonder
think,
what side they'll bring out.
well, that's
Yeah.
what I was about to say, because I have a feeling that they are still in the FA Cup and they're still in the League Cup, I think. And therefore, they're going to have back-to-back Saturday midweek games. And if that is the case, through the rest of December, even right up to Christmas. So if that is the case, then they actually played their under-21 team in the last leg of this trophy. Yeah, so they're playing Huddersfield at home on Saturday, Stevenage away next Tuesday, Doncaster at home on the 13th. Then Chelsea at home on the 16th, which I'm sure is a big, big, big game for them.
Yep.
And then the Christmas schedule where everyone else is playing,
Yeah,
which
so
is
they're busy.
three games in 9 days. So, given that choice, I wouldn't obviously forfeit the game if I was a Cardiff City player or Cardiff City coach. And they've obviously got some very, very good youngsters, as we know, because we played them in August. I'd still say they're the best team that we played the season. But I'd be fascinated to compare that team that played in August with the team that we faced tomorrow night. I suspect we'll be rather stronger than them because we don't play again until next Tuesday away at Exeter.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see. But I think I have my sense would be that Cardiff would rest a few players. They're top of the league. They want to go up. That's their biggest priority. But also Chelsea away. So, Anyhow, yes, Angus, we are incredibly grateful for you to join us.
It's a
And I
pleasure.
feel that there's a few things we need to chat about, really.
You can ask me anything you like.
Thank
Honestly, you
you.
can, and I will do my very, very best to answer, as you
No,
know.
it's all cool. And listen, chaps, do jump in, because I know that the guys have got some questions as well. So I guess I want to start with a big one, and we can go from there. But so, do you kind of think that we can continue into the future as a fan-owned club? And I guess if so, how do we go about attracting the investment that we need to continue being fan-owned?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, absolutely do. Fan ownership is completely fundamental to me. And I think it is to the rest of the board as well. And it's part of our DNA from where we've come from. So it'd be a very brave Don's Trust board that stood up and said we're not going to be fan owned anymore. And that isn't something that's on my list of things to do. So So then, if that's the case, right? If that's where you've got to be, what does that mean that you can do in terms of getting investors and getting finance and money into the club? Well, you have to find a partner to invest in the club who gets that, who gets fan ownership, who somehow gets that being fan owned brings you more as an investment than it takes away. Now, some investors won't do that. Some investors come and talk to us and say, obviously we'd have to buy the whole thing, and it's a very short conversation, right? Because they're not the investors for us. But we are absolutely sure that we can find and work with investors who get us, who get what we're trying to do, and who can help us. And the way that they can help us is by investing in us and growing with us and putting working capital into our club to help us to be successful. And that, that's what we're spending time trying to bring about, an investment like that with a group of people who can get who we are and why they would want to invest in fan-owned clubs and get the value of Wimbledon and take us with them on a journey further.
And you
I know
feel
you've
that
got
we've
different
got there
questions
are
for that.
investors in there are investors kind of that you've got in mind or people you're talking to?
We're in really active conversations with numerous different groups, which is so interesting.
Cool.
And I can't, obviously, I can't,
No.
don't ask because I can't tell you.
That's fine. No, we're just interested that it's
But
happening.
there are numerous, a handful of different investment groups. Football's really interesting to people at the moment, and our story is really interesting to people. Our location is really interesting to people. Our focus on community is really interesting to people. Our fantastic stadium and its capability to draw crowds is really interesting to people. The opportunity to help us develop that to its full potential in terms of the number of seats we could have there, and additional opportunities for, property improvements in that stadium, is really interesting to people. Yeah, of course, not everyone is going to have all of the things that we want. But we have like I say, a handful of people that we're talking to who all exhibit all of the things that we have been talking about, who get that we are bringing a big piece of ourselves to this investment opportunity, and they have to bring a big piece of themselves to it. We have a track record of revenue every year. We have our audiences in the leagues. We have our fantastic stadium. That's our piece. We have our community focus, and we have our fan ownership model. They have expertise, let's say, in real estate development, perhaps, or in stadium development, and they have working capital, and they have an understanding that in order to grow our club, we have to grow our academy, and we have to grow our ability to develop players, and we have to grow the stadium side that we're on. So, yeah, we're talking. I mean, I can't tell you how many people are involved in it. There's two boards full of people, and then there's a whole group of people around the working groups in the fundraising and finance committees who are adjuncts to that, who are helping us to construct discussion documents and organize meetings and for us to do those things. And it's really, really active. It's not something we're thinking about doing. It's something we're all involved in. Every day, perhaps every couple of days, certainly every week, talking to these folks and moving the conversations forward and trying to get us to a place where we think we can land one of these investors that's compatible with us and can help us move forward the way we want to.
I know Niall's going to have about a million questions, so I'm going to jump in there first
Go for it.
quickly.
Go for it. I'll try and answer. I really will.
So I am of the mind to be voting for 50.1 or whatever it is, right? Because I would like to see investment coming in. I know Niall is less inclined in that way. But my question then is, say that happens, because I think that sounds like a positive move, etc. In my mind, how do you see these investors or the future? How does that connect with plugging this 1.5 million deficit that we're having year on year? Because I don't quite see how the two things come together to make that a long-term change. Are we just expecting an investor to bung 1.5 million every year, or what are the kind of other bits that are going to make that disappear?
Well, you'll see. Okay, so you'll see the recent financial statement we put out, and that has reinforced and told the same numbers story of all the financial statements we've put out over the last few years. But it had an important new phrase in it, which was working capital. And we know that we need working capital to bridge the gap in our revenues while we get more successful. So if we can find an investor who buys into that and who has the ingredients to help us to become more successful too, and the working capital, and respects fan ownership, okay, there's a big
So can I,
group of ingredients here that all have to come together. But if we can do that, and we're talking to investors who understand that, we've already had these discussions and they get it, they understand what we're asking, then we can bridge that gap. Then we can be a sustainable club going forward. We can maintain our fan ownership. We can build an academy that can generate player sales that can help us to be to continue our success path, both in terms of the league and in terms of selling players too.
So what I wouldn't mind defining a little bit there, because I think this is important, is when you say we can do this by becoming more successful, what do you mean when you say that term, more successful?
Well, more successful than we are now. Wouldn't we like to be in a higher position in the current league, first of all, and challenging for promotion in that league when we can, in a way that doesn't make us go into a situation where we don't have enough money to continue. As long as we can understand the sustainability, financial sustainability, I mean, of the club. And an investment partner that works with us is working with us to improve our performance on the pitch through working capital. And we know that we can do that without risking any of the things that we care about, fan ownership, our fantastic stadium, all of those things that we hold very, very close to our hearts, then happy days. But maybe I haven't answered your question fully, but that's the plan, to do it sustainably, to not go, to not go massively into the red and then destroy our club in front of our very eyes. We couldn't do that. None of us on the boards would ever be able to go into Wimbledon again if we did that. So, and we also have a tremendous responsibility. Look at Exeter's news today. They're making people redundant. And I feel so sorry for them because they're the other fan-owned exemplar club in our league, and we wish them well, and I hope they find their way out of it. But we need to have and continue to have a stable environment in our club. We've got full-time employees who work for us. We've got a full-time professional football team that are paid for by us. All of those people have got mortgages and salaries. Their salaries and their mortgages and their bills that have got to be found from somewhere. We also have our bondholders. We have, we can't play fast and loose with that, and we won't do that. Everyone would like us to stay at wherever we are now, 75%+ fan owned, but we can't do that and do the things we want to do. Our stadium is fantastic, but it will not work in the very low leagues. It's too big. So we've got to be aiming for the league that we're in and the league above us, in order to make the most out of being in SW19 and all of the cachet of the brand of Wimbledon that we could bring to that. That starts to really be attractive at the higher end of those leagues. So, it's a tremendous responsibility we've got, and we are a stable and well-run football club. We're probably the best-run football club, in my opinion, in League One. We're losing the least money. If you look at our accounts for this year, it's about 600K that we're losing, and that's in football terms. That's just, I know it's a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but in football terms, it's peanuts. The average is losing 5 million plus a year. we can't afford to lose 5 million a year. We can't afford to lose 600k, actually, really. We need to find ways of generating more revenue out of the asset in our stadium. We need to find ways to get up to doubling the capacity of seating that we have and having an audience for that that can come to match days. We need to be getting revenue out of the food and beverage and the conference facilities that we've got. We need to have other folks using our stadium for sporting events and paying us for the privilege of doing that if we can. Like we have with the London Broncos, for example. And, you know, those things all have to sort of hum along together. We have to find a way to make that work. We're totally convinced that we can. And in talking to the numerous groups of investors that we've been meeting with, we've explained that to them, and they haven't just said, oh, well, thanks very much, mate. See ya. They've come back and said, okay, well, here's our first thoughts about how we would do that. What do you think? And we're like, oh, that's interesting. Let's have a conversation about it. Okay, well, how would we do this? How would we do that? Okay, well, we'll go and think about that. We'll come back. And they come back. These people are active. And we're working really hard to try and bring that forward. And of course, we've got to do that in concert with bringing back this decision point to the members of our club. And we've got to take those members on that journey with us.
Yep.
And one of the frustrating things for me, and for I'm sure for all of the board, is that we can't tell everybody everything that we're doing in real time, because these are really active, multi-million pound commercial discussions with serious investors.
But Angus, so I think that's, I completely get that. But I think even this, hearing this, and that's what's going on, is going to ease a lot of people's mind. It's brilliant. I think it feels really exciting.
I'm sure I'll get thousands more questions. And by the way, I'd be happy to have them. Angus.fox, you know, Don's Trust, and you just email me and I will try and answer people. Yeah. But it's crucial to us that we do this right. We are not messing around with our football club. We are not messing around with the core underpinnings that we know that are crucial to the way that we are. But we know that we've got to grow. And we also know that player sales works. We've had the best results in player sales in recent times in both League One and in League Two together. Now that hasn't quite happened so far this season, but in recent times that's been a tremendous success for us. So we know that that having a strong academy and growing players and choosing players that perhaps have been not understood at their previous clubs, who come to us and smash it out of the park and then go on to the Premier League. You know, that's a fantastic model if we can pull it off. And we think we know how to do that. We've got a football department that are good at that. And we just need to try and find a way to, make that a production factory for us out of the academy over time. But we know that will take time too, because our academy is really at the maximum place it can be within the constraints of the budgets that we've got for it. So we know we have to invest in it. And that means facilities, location might need to change. And in order to get it up the tiers of the academy structure in the UK, that's what we'll have to do that. But all of those things are on the table and they're all achievable, if you ask me. What we've got to do in the short term is we've got to get to the point where we can get one of these investors to agree with us and wish to sign up, take our members on the journey to get agreement to do it, and do all of that while we watch our football regulator evolving oversight of football clubs in England. And that's really fascinating too. I've sat in on a couple of football regulator calls in the last couple of weeks. Professional outfit, very smart bunch of people, but they're a regulator. They're in charge, right? They will ultimately determine whether clubs can operate in the leagues by delivering licenses to us. And some of the things that they want football clubs to do are quite scary to us on our own. The financial tests that they require us to have a full license are quite strong. So without this investment and without a partner who can say, yes, we can help Wimbledon pass these financial tests, here's how, then it's going to be super difficult for us going forward. Even though we support and fully think that the regulator is a great idea, it's also going to be a challenge for us, because we're going to have to face up to some of these structural points that football clubs usually just get an owner to say, yes, I've got a blank checkbook, here's my answer to the question. We can't do that. We're a bunch of volunteers and representing the needs of our members, and then we can't just go to the members and say, please, all of you, send us your bank details, we need you to guarantee, you know, 20 million quid or whatever it is that we decide that we need to have for 3 years runway. We can't do that. The members wouldn't, I mean, some of them might want to try and help, but we couldn't. It would be really difficult to ask our members to do that. Although,
that's very interesting.
Who's a member who has got that kind of money and wants to get in touch,
feel free. Yeah, Mark, you've got a question, mate.
I had a couple of questions for Angus, following up on comments you just made there about the statement. For me, the most interesting thing about the statement that came out from both boards. It did gain, obviously, national publicity. It was a bit of a slow week. I think it might be an international week or whatever. So it got on the BBC website. Adam and I had a slight disagreement about whether or not that was lazy journalism. But it did obviously talk about financial sustainability. What was interesting for me was why it went out then. And also, in terms of timing, you've obviously talked about, as we understand, these discussions with external bodies who might want to invest. By the sound of it, the level of investment we'd like from them would mean we would have to take it below 75, and therefore to the 50.1, and therefore presumably, again, if a deal was potentially in place, that would be something which would have to come back to the members for a vote.
Yeah, yes to all of that. So the timing is because we were ready with that financial statement, and we were in the middle of active discussions with at least more than two groups of investors, and we felt we needed to, we have an obligation to tell members as soon as we can when we're talking to investors. So we felt that we had to say something. And we felt we wanted to make it really, really clear that the financial numbers haven't changed from where we were before, but we were in active discussions with people, and we felt that was the way forward. So that's what the purpose of the statement was. You're right, it got picked up, and it kind of, the BBC's version of the article did say what we said, but in a different order, kind of, and they made their own headline out of it, and that's fine. There wasn't anything in there that wasn't in our statement, I don't think. It's just their emphasis was different, and I suppose that's what journalists do with any given statement. But I think we also wanted to make it, in addition to making it clear to members that was our direction of travel, so that it wouldn't be a surprise when we talk about it at a future meeting, people wouldn't say, well, you didn't tell us anything about this, why were you acting in secret. We're not. We've told everyone that's what we're doing, and we'll come back with further detail as it progresses. But the other thing we wanted to do was to sort of open it up that we're doing this and see if anyone else gets in touch. And guess what? They did. So
I was going to ask that, whether or not it was trying to flush people out, so to speak.
So, you know, it's always best if you're looking for investment to have more than one organization wishing to be interested in you, isn't it? So so that's a good thing. It doesn't mean obviously that everyone who calls us is gets our values or understands us, but I know we've been fielding you know, several new inquiries based on that statement, so that's good, I think.
Well, I'm going to come to Niall now. Niall.
Yeah, I'm kind of not trying to dominate. I've been very patient.
He has, but this is a 5-minute question, Angus. So just pay attention.
It's not a five-minute question. So the very obvious thing is where I'm concerned about is once you've sold it, you've sold it, and what happens next? Because when I've looked at the financial figures and the amount that we're losing, which I will also stress, the fair game analysis is that AFC Wimbledon are probably among the best, or the best run, financially run clubs in League One, right? And that should not be in dispute. Yet we still lose £600,000 a year, right? So that's, I want to say that we are really well run. So all those people who go like, "Oh yeah, you're a bunch of numpties" or whatever, that is a load of baloney, in my opinion. Where my concern is that obviously we do need to have extra investment in. If you sell the club, sell bits of the club, not all the club, sell down to 50 plus one, then what commitment are these investors having to say that, okay, we're going to invest in now, but we're going to maintain that investment year on year on year on year? Because once, if you haven't got that commitment, then the current trajectory is the amount that clubs are expected to lose each year in League One is going up significantly each year.
We're well aware
So
of it.
if we were to sell down to 50 plus one, the reality is that in a couple of years' time, we're going to be needing to find even more money to survive. I mean, obviously, I'm a big advocate of the regulator, and we're working on big financial papers that I will share with the board, Angus, on what that looks like, because there's some very interesting concepts with a whole load of financial experts that we've been talking to present a completely brand new model of how football's finances should be organized, which is actually really exciting. But in the short term, my fear is once you've sold it, the pressure's going to be on to go under 50 plus one, because we will need revenue in the future. So that's the question I want to know, is whether there's that guarantee. And what I have said to the boys in the pod before is that if that investment was in stadium infrastructure, then I think I'm much more pro going down to 50 plus one, because that's a permanent, long-term, sustainable investment. And that's what I worry about. I don't want that extra investment to go on players' wages, because if it
It's not
does.
going to. No, I can tell you that for a fact. It's not about it's it, the investment is not about a race to spend money on players. Quite the opposite. Not at all. That's, yes, we've talked about needing working capital to help us to go forward, but that's in addition to the investment to buy to buy an ownership stake in our club.
So on that, is the people that you're talking about, investors, looking more at CapEx or long-term projects
That you
rather than
shouldn't ask
maintaining
me,
players'
because I
wages?
you sh we should hook you in with Michelle or someone else who knows about what that means. But I can certainly tell you that we are talking about stadium, real estate, academy. Those are the things that we want the investment for. And working capital is about bridging the gap while we b build those things and become more successful and have more revenue.
Right, because
And
that for me makes me feel more happy. Because I said to the guys before that if we're doing investing, it needs to be in those things rather than, because if it goes on players' wages, then it's just we're
no,
just.
it's just money down. Well, it's not, it might give us a short-term success, but that's not guaranteed for one. And it's also gone once it's gone. And we don't, that's not the business that we're in. Like I said to you before, we need to look after the very successful stadium business that we've got, and all those employees whose paychecks and mortgages depend upon that business sticking around. We're not going to risk any of that. We can't, and we won't. We've also got our bondholders to think of in thinking about this stuff, and we've got to repay that bond debt. So repaying the bond debt, expanding the training ground, expanding the stadium, delivering working capital to help us to be more successful. Those are all ingredients in this discussion, even to the point where we're, there's got to be something in it for the investor. They're not going to come and invest without an ability to get some return on that investment. Investors don't work like that. So we're working out how to do that within the construct of the way that we're organized right now. So there's a really active piece of work to establish exactly how to do that. What structure is the right one to have to make that possible, so that investors don't feel that they're putting money into something they could never make any money out of, because that wouldn't work for them, and that we feel that we're not selling our soul and giving away the farm when we take an investment, because that would be unacceptable to our members too. We won't do it. Gosh, you know, I wish we were at the point where we had a like a piece of paper to say, this is the deal, this is what we're doing, and this is who it is, and this is why, and this is now how we need to do 50.01. But we just haven't got all of those moving parts in place yet. They're all interlinked, and it's a really complicated set of ingredients that we're working with. But I'm touching wood a bit, but I've never been more confident that we'll be able to do this than I am at the moment, because of the amount of effort that's going on into it across a whole group of people, not just us, but different groups of investors working on how to make this work as well. So that's, to me, that's fascinating. We ought to be able to find a way through it.
I've got one more
Angus.
question. I know Adam's got his hand up. One more question from me, and that is that obviously, from a fair game perspective, we have been working on this model, and I'd like to be able to get to a situation, Angus, where we work with you, because I think where the long-term sustainability of football generally requires clubs like AFC Wimbledon to raise their head above the parapet and start campaigning and asking for it, because there is a future that can be different. I think the regulator has opened that door for the first time for the wider ecosystem, because I think the problem is that too many clubs are overspending. If we can bring that down, that helps clubs like AFC
You mean
Wimbledon to compete.
player wages specifically?
Yeah, there is a way around it. There is a way around
So,
it, and we're looking at that.
we already are, aren't we? We are the example of fighting against the tide of increased player wages, because our funding is what it is, and we attract players who can play to our level of funding, and we work really, really hard to get the very best players because of our unique capabilities in finding talent that perhaps have been missed by other clubs, or perhaps we've found a thing that we know that we can make better in that player playing for us in our system, in our way of doing things, that will allow them to be more successful than their perhaps previous stats would have allowed for. So we're already doing that, and we have discussed, we are discussing player wages, but it would take an agreement amongst all the clubs, wouldn't it, to bring that about, or at least a large number of them, right at the moment, today.
Yeah,
And
I mean, I think there is definitely an alternative way to look at it, which I'd be really good to talk to you, because I think the legal advice is basically, an imposed salary cap, the PFA will run over and completely demolish really quickly, because there's a whole range of reasons why they're against. But there is an alternative way of doing it, and that's through the distribution deal. Looking at rewarding clubs that stay within parameters, right? Because that's the way you can get around it,
I'm sure
potentially. That's
there
the legal
are,
advice we've
and I don't know that. I don't know the details of that. You'll have to come and explain it to us, and
Yeah,
at
I
some
will do. I
point,
will
and
do.
we'd
Yeah, I
love
will
to do
do. And
that.
I won't bore you guys the rest of it. I'll let Adam take the question, but Angus, that's something I'd love to be able to talk to the board and the PLC about what that looks like, because
Well, we'd like
we're
to
taking
understand
a
it,
lot of legal
and
advice on it.
something I would like to make really clear is we would like, and I think some other, not all, but some other League One owners would also like to lose less money in this league. We're
Yeah,
not the
there's a
only
lot of
people.
them who are in that same boat.
Yeah, and there are
And I'll
some
speak to
that
them.
perhaps don't hold that, and they would always say, yeah, well, I'll just throw the money in because then we'll be the top. And those people will always exist. But I think there are a lot of owners who look at us, look at how well run we are, and think they're only losing 600K. Why are we spending 5, 6, 7 million quid? And that's an important conversation. And the more we can have that conversation with people, the better. But we also have to deal with the situation we find ourselves in 2025, and maybe some of these things aren't going to be around until maybe a couple of years' time, when the regulator's fully established and what have you. We can't wait for that. We've got to deal with the financial issues that are pressing upon us in this season, and the financial statement points that out. And those numbers haven't changed. We do need to deal with our financial situation this next calendar year. We can't wait for 3 years to deal with it. We need to deal with it now, and that's why we're embarking upon this program now. And it's going to be, we're going to be busy next year. We're going to have member meetings and votes and discussions, and try and get through this in a sensible way, as quickly as we can, with the right result for our club in mind, always.
Excellent. And listen, Adam and Mark, I want to take your questions together, see if they clash over, and then we can get on to Angus, and because we're aware that we're running late, Angus, and I think we really appreciate your time here, and I know that we've got a lot of questions. If you're able to hang on for a bit longer, that'd be brilliant.
Oh, hang on, as long as you want, I'll answer all the questions you want if I possibly can.
Adam, and then Mark, and then Angus, you can answer the questions.
Sure. I think so mine is about the fact that we've got a runway that is running out in terms of making a decision to 50 plus one, right? We've got to make that decision relatively soon. And so that's clearly what's coming up. That's the kind of next thing. I'm just thinking about that. Do you think that there's at any point that we might see some of these investors or groups actively appearing prior to that decision? If you can't answer that, that's fine. Because that will likely have a sway on members' decisions.
And Mark, is yours a similar, different sort of question?
Kind of connected. Mine was just actually in terms of the timing, because what I was just wanting to clarify is the next quite considerable tranche of bond repayments, which I believe is over 3 million and I believe is March next year. And I just wanted to just double check that, that's all. Because obviously that's going to focus the mind in particular with regards to working capital, and therefore timing of when investments would need to be in place and confirmed by.
I'll check the dates, Mark, but I think it's not March 26.
Okay.
It's the following year, I think.
It was in 27.
Yeah,
so I thought there was one in 26 and one in 27, but I couldn't.
I think there will be something in 26, but I don't know. I don't have the details. Michelle's all over that stuff, so yeah. I'll check with her and I'll come back to you and let you know. On the timings, there's so many moving parts here. So remember, we had an SGM last week about our constitution. What a topic that was to have an SGM about. The Constitution Working Group and all the people involved in that have done a brilliant job of getting something that's needed doing for 20 years sorted out. Hats off to them for trying, because it's hard. And we have to do that. We've also got our AGM coming up in December.
We've just seen that. That's just arrived. That's just arrived in everyone's.
Should be arriving today. Now. Yeah, I heard it was
we've
coming
got it
today.
Now. 15th, Monday the 15th, 5 p.m. in the 1889 Lounge, Plough Lane, and online.
Yes. Yeah,
7
Monday
p.m.
the 15th.
Not 5 p.m.
7 p.m. I'm sure it is.
7 p.m., yes, sorry.
Yeah, and, that's an important meeting. It's a bit procedural because it's back-to-back with the PLC AGM as well. And also that's the point at which our new board takes office, if you like. And although there's only really one change to that, given all the changes that happened after the elections and then previous to the elections, which I'm sure we won't need to go into too much, but you can ask me about it if you want to. But so we've got to then, that group has got to then figure out what weighs up for the timing for the next period. Now we're working ahead of that. We are having a timetabling, I hesitate to call it a workshop, but a meeting with all the things in front of us and all the timings and all of the dependencies that they have and how we're going to make them happen, because there's a lot of moving parts in terms of just physical meetings that we've got to organize that have dates by which papers have got to go out before them and what have you. So getting that ordering right and getting it ready in time with an investor would be brilliant. So, do we go out with the 50.01 ahead of that signing of an investor or not? We haven't decided that yet. That will be the subject of that meeting. Obviously, it would be better if we knew who the investor was and what their plan was and we could share it, because that was one of the feedbacks that we got last time we did 50.01 was, there wasn't anyone there. You're just doing this without any substance behind it. Last time we missed by a couple of hundred votes or something. So
yeah, Niall.
I would never criticize members for voting with the way they wanted to vote on an issue. That's absolutely fine. But it means we didn't make the argument well enough, or we missed an opportunity somehow to get across why it was so important. But I can see that it would be better if we could possibly get an investor or a representative of the investor to be part of that, a part of that program. But that isn't decided yet either, because we don't know who that investor is yet, because we're working with a number of different groups, and some of them are more amenable to doing that than others. So there's, it's a discussion that's still going on. I'm sorry to be a bit vague about it, but that's what it
But
is. But
Angus, this is great. Honestly, I think the fact that we're hearing that these conversations are going on is going to make people like excited. I think this is great. I think
well, and
people to know,
because
and to know there's a handful of people that you're talking to, I think just sounds really exciting
it is,
to us.
because it's look, you know, that both our boards are you know, the Don's Trust board and the club board are both united on the fact that we need to do this. The 50.01 thing is necessary. We'd love to stay 75% fan owned, but we can't not and be sustainable and achieve our objectives for success. And you know, and move the club forward the way we want to. And that's where we're at, really. We've got to try and solve these difficult problems. We think we can, and that's what gives us the heart, really, to push it forward. And the more that we can do, and you know, I'll get criticized for this too, but I don't mind. People will criticize me for not coming to members early enough with information sometimes. And the more we can do to come to members with the right information at the right time, the better. So if I come to members with information that isn't completely thought through, then they're rightly going to say, well, this isn't really completely thought through, is it? So, and I get that. And so we're trying to get that balance right. It's really difficult to get it right, but it's what we're doing. It's what's keeping us awake, and everybody is just totally focused on moving this thing forward in a in a, and we're working evenings. We've had meetings at weekends. We've had meetings in you know, law firms in London in their offices. We've had meetings in people's houses. We've had meetings in pubs, you know. Scared as we were that people would walk into us who were Wimbledon fans and go, what are you lot all doing in the pub? But we, you know, that didn't happen, fortunately.
We
So,
lost
you
you.
know,
We lost you for a minute there, Angus. That's why we were trailing you and you disappeared down a side road or something like that. Very clever.
yeah, you know, you never know.
But I just want a couple of things, Mark, and I'll come to you. Just because we've actually had a listener who actually made a comment, which is just unheard of on our podcast. So someone has said, come back to us and said he was interested in, has there been talks about selling off half of Plough Lane to a sports partner like the London Broncos or whoever? Is that part of a conversation?
No.
And the other thing, that's okay, that's interesting. And the other thing that I saw on social media, and I know that we're against it, but people are saying about getting rid of the women's team. And we just want to know if the Don's Trust are remaining committed to having a women's team.
Well, we all think the women's team is important, but the women's team needs to find a structure for success too. So when we're talking about talking to investors, we're talking about talking to investors who also talk to us about the women's team.
Brilliant.
So that's about as clear as I can get. But yeah, the women's team is part of this discussion too.
Fantastic. Thank you. Mark.
You just stole my question.
Oh, sorry. Is it?
I mean,
No.
yeah, because the interesting thing for me would be about priorities. And obviously, having been on the board, I have some understanding of what the costings of the women's team have been, and I'm sure they're not going down at all. I'm sure they're going up, and they managed an excellent comeback win yesterday against hashtag United, which in itself is an example of, you know, loads of money being thrown in. London City is another example again. So that's an ever spiraling cost overall, and Kevin Foster and his team and the squad are doing an amazing job just to keep their head above water in sort of typical Wimbledon style. But I guess in priorities time, that would be a question. You know, yes, we obviously want to, and we need to keep the academy going. Yes, we obviously want to, and we need to keep the stadium going, and we need to keep the press team going at the very highest level, preferably League One. But obviously, the people would think that the women's team is expendable. It's positive and reassuring, personally speaking, just personally speaking, to hear that investors themselves are understanding. We had Ashley Hinks as the captain on at the beginning of the season, and
I
she was
listened to
actually
it. She
saying
was brilliant.
herself, yeah, but one of the things she said was how much of an opportunity investment in women's football is, investing in women's football is. And if you've got investors who are seeing that opportunity as well, then that's a
Investors see
positive
it,
step forward.
certainly. And you talk to Americans and you see the success of women's football in America. For a start, they just totally get it. And they see us as underdeveloped in not just in Wimbledon, but in England, in women's football. So, it is, it's part of the conversation. And there's nothing that I'd like more than for us to have, women's football and men's football in Wimbledon colours, playing with Wimbledon sponsors on their shirts and bringing in crowds into the grounds, and enjoying match days and the different audiences that you get for women's football, which is terrific.
That's fantastic.
You
Thank
talked about a really quick one. You talked about Angus at the getting the message across, and we've mentioned it on the pod in the last few weeks. Getting the message across to at least three distinctively different groups, I think possibly is the biggest challenge about 50 plus one, because you've got the, for want of a better phrase, the group of our kind of ilk that have the PTSD with regards to everything that happened with Norwegians and MK. Then you've got the latter group that only knows King's Meadow, and then more recently Plough Lane. And now you have the group that are in Earlsfield and affluent around SW19, SW17, SW18, that don't know any different. Maybe they, that latter group, are the hardest group to be able to inform because they see the nice shiny stadium. They don't know all the pain that we all went through. So how could you tweak the information
Maybe they're the
appropriately to that?
easiest. Maybe they're the easiest to reach, actually. No, I don't know. I'd have to talk
But they
to more.
may not care about being found out, is what I'm getting at. It's not a
I
question
think
that
you'd
anyone
mean
can answer.
they go to us. They go to us because
There are a group of
our
fans that don't
fanatic.
care about it. Sure. Sorry, Niall.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I also think there is a load of people that, like, you're in a big metropolis. Right, actually, everywhere in London is about an hour away from Wimbledon. Therefore, you're looking at, and then there's the whole bit about going to Surrey that we're really lucky with. There are so many other football clubs you can go and watch. The reason you go watch us is because our story is unique and we're fan-owned, and there is that ability that I think that gives us our USP, that where I think we've got the opportunity. And that's where my view is. I think that is an audience that we could also reach, that we need to be talking about. Who are the people going to go? Kind of a bit like football's a mess, football's finance is a mess, there's a load of things wrong with it, and here's a club that isn't.
I
And
agree with that. I think I
that's what's so clever and so
and we're
unique about us. I would
and we're
assume some of those investors will think that.
and we're doing that through the work that the club does in the community, both through the foundation and DLAG and other things. I mean, DLAG's not the club exactly, but it's a club related activity and very close to us. And we're different to the others. We can tell that story more effectively. We can reach all these people now in ways we've never been able to before because they come to our games and we have much, much better data on who they are, and so we can send information to those different groups in a more targeted fashion. To the folks who manned the barricades, let me call them that some of those folks I'm never going to be able to convince, because whatever we try to convince them of, they'll find some reason why that's impossible, or maybe perfectly justifiably in their minds, and that's fine. But I just won't be able to convince them. But and they're not less important because of that. They're not imp less important because they were part of that particular cohort of people, but they're also not more important than the other members of the trust. And that's we've got to try and figure out how to manage. We've got over 7,000 members. And there's maybe a few hundred people like that, and they're quite vocal as well, which is fine. And they're vocal to me. I'm sure my inbox will is always filling up with emails from folks with various issues, and I'm happy to try and deal with them. But we're not a protest club manning barricades anymore. We're a multi-million pound League One football club in the EFL, in Plough Lane, for God's sake. We're doing so much better than you could possibly have hoped for when we started that whole thing. You know, can you imagine if it, at the very, very beginning you said we not only would be back in the borough, we'd be back in Plough Lane, we'll be in the Football League, and we'll be playing, you know, sell out crowds every Saturday at home games, and winning. Fantastic. So
Angus, it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm gonna start to wrap it up now. It usually takes me three attempts to do this.
At least three.
But I just one thing, because we were talking to Zav a couple of weeks ago, and obviously he's done his amazing walk.
Yeah,
the 92 thing, and he was talking about potentially new structures for the club to look at exploring as well. One was about the club becoming a CIC. I just wondered if he's talked to you about it, or if he's coming in to have a chat.
Yeah,
if that's not something on your radar at the moment, because
no, it is on my radar. I listened to your podcast, and I emailed Zav and said, I know you're already talking to us, to Graham Price and to James Longhurst in particular, but come and talk to us more. Send us your thoughts on what it is, what it means to you to be a best in community club, and how to bring that about. Because that's what he said to you guys.
Yeah.
That he had, that's what he wanted to do. And he's done that. And Pricey and James and I are, you know, we're in discussions with him about how to move that forward. Exactly what form that might take, I don't know. But we've looked at the CIC structure based on, I think we may have already been looking at it before. I wouldn't like to say we hadn't, but certainly we're interested, really interested in what he's got to say. He's got some fantastic ideas about how to bring that brilliance of community. And you said it last week on, not bigging you up or anything, by the way, but you said it last week on the pod here the difference between a 1.5 million loss and a 5 million loss was having hundreds of volunteers. You said that effect last week.
Yeah,
that
was
right,
the thing.
Right.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I was interested to know how much, you know, what our in kind is, because how much our.
Yeah, I don't know how you calculate it, but I do know it's real, and I do know that's part of that brilliant community club thing too.
Yep.
Bringing the volunteers along with us is crucial. You were making the point last week that if we were just going to take money and put an owner in place, then the volunteers would walk away, and that we wouldn't want to happen. They're part of our DNA.
Yep.
And that, you know, when you start to look at, that's why I said at the beginning, all these things are interrelated. You can't break this thing apart from the model it's got, the fan ownership model, the volunteers, the charities, and the people who just get activated in the community to get stuff done. You can't, because if you do, you break it. And if we break it, it's gone.
Yep.
And so we won't, we just aren't prepared to do that. We're not prepared to allow that to happen. And so we will find the right investment group or consortium or whatever it is that comes together to do this with us. And then we'll bring it to members next year with the full support of both the boards. And I really hope that the members will see the opportunity the way that we do.
That is brilliant. Angus, thank you so much for your time. I genuinely feel excited having spoken to you about this. It just feels like we've got a lot more clarity from our point of view. It's great to know what's going on. And we really, really appreciate your time. And it's also wonderful that you've said that if people have got questions to email you. So if people have got questions, remind us again of your email address.
It's angus.fox@thedonstrust.org.
Brilliant. And just to remind everyone again, that there is an SGM coming up on Monday, the 15th of December at 7 o'clock in the 1889 Lounge and online as well. Thanks once again, Angus. Thank you to Niall Cooper, who's dropped off already, to Adam, who's in his coat, ready to run and get his train, to Mark as well.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Angus.
I'm Matt Cooper. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
Standing here. since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If